From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. When Illinois State University announced its enrollment this school year, university officials also said they broke their record for overall enrollment for the fourth year in a row. Just under 22,000 students now attend ISU. Overseeing all this has been Andave Tarhule. He served as president of the university since March of last year and was interim president for another year before that. Incidentally, he's ISU's 21st president. He was born and raised in Nigeria, where he earned his bachelor's and master's degrees in geography and environmental resources planning. He continued his education in Hamilton, Canada, and before coming to Illinois State in 2020, served as vice provost and dean of the graduate school at Binghamton University in New York. Dr. Tarhule joins us live today in another installment of our series on how colleges and universities across the 21st state are reckoning with the current climate for higher education in America. President Tarhule, welcome to the 21st Show. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me, Brian. I'm excited to join you.
And listeners, our phone lines are open for this conversation. How do you think Illinois universities are doing? And if you have a connection to ISU, what are your top concerns and priorities for the college right now? And how do you think universities should be responding to the threats to higher education? Join the conversation at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. All right, President Tarhule, accepting the U of I, many Illinois universities have seen declining enrollment going back decades. To what do you attribute Illinois State going against the trend?
I think, Brian, I'd mention three things. Number one is I think we have a really good brand. The university has been the main teaching school for a long time, and so we've produced a lot of teachers who are out in the community at many other universities and a lot and school districts. And a lot of those people had really good experiences here at ISU. So I think the value and the brand are very well known, and that's been one of the factors. The second, I would say, it's a lot of hard work by a lot of our staff and admissions folks. So this is a never-ending task, and they have worked really hard, really intentionally about explaining to parents and prospective students the value of an ISU degree, and that seems to be resonating. And I think the third factor I would mention is many years ago we anticipated that we were going to have these declines in enrollment because the demographic changes, we've known about them for a long time. So we intentionally started revamping our portfolio of academic programs, looking at those programs that we didn't have, but we knew that students and employers were looking for. So we added several of those programs, and we also expanded our capacity in programs that we did have and we were seeing demand from students. So of the programs we previously didn't have, it's nurse engineering. So we didn't have an engineering program, and so we worked very hard and created an engineering program. And this year we enrolled 169 students. That's 169 students that wouldn't have come here because we didn't have what they were looking for. Similarly, we didn't have a data science program. We knew that employers and students were looking for that. So we created that, and we got 40 students this year, creative technologies. And also nursing, our nursing program has been strong for a very long time. And we've seen the demand go up. And so we expanded our capacity in nursing. And today we're taking 100 more students than we could take before. We made other changes in programs in business, applied science and technology. So I think that very intentional planning and looking at our portfolio and essentially looking at what we knew employers were looking for and what students are also looking for. When you combine that with the brand recognition and the hard work of our enrollment staff and really everyone at the university, I think that's part of what's helping us maintain the numbers that you quoted.
How do you maintain the sort of quality experience from whether it's housing, public safety, academic standards, as Illinois State continues to grow?
Interestingly, as we see, certainly from some of the traditional measures of quality, like GPA of students coming in, that's continuing to go up. And so I think it's a function of how many people are aspiring to come to the university. If you have a good pool, then it gives you the luxury of maintaining the quality of the people that you pick or that you admit. And so that allows you to keep, in terms of the intake and the people coming in, that allows you to maintain quality. Once they are here, we're very mindful of the fact that our brand is built on our quality. Students are essentially, and their parents and siblings who attended the university, they know what an Illinois State University degree offers. And our job is to make sure that we continue to keep that quality. So we've been very mindful about traditional student success metrics like retention and graduation rates, but also the student experience. We know the many different challenges and stresses that students are experiencing, mental health, mental stress, the ability to network with others. And so it's very intentionally looking at the entire arc of the student's experience and focusing on every aspect of those and trying to maintain it or to improve it as much as possible.
Last year, the university's budget was on track for an eventual deficit of more than $30 million. Fast forward to this year, and the message is that the budget is balanced. What happened to get from that point to this point?
So last year, you're correct, we did a three-year forecast, and the data showed that we would have a $9 million focus at the end of this fiscal year that just ended, FY25. That would increase to about $14 million in the next year and then $17 million. So cumulatively, we were looking at a three-year deficit that would exceed $30 million if we didn't do anything. Well, we decided to do something about it. Some of the actions that we took were actually difficult, very painful. But we decided we were going to be very transparent about the problem and that we would deal with it decisively and collaboratively. So one of the first things I did was working with the cabinet and the board of trustees. I created a task force called RISE, which stood for Illinois State's Path to Resilience, Innovation, Sustainability, and Excellence. And that group looked at what the issues were that we were facing and also some of the actions that we needed to take to avoid the trajectory that we were seeing. So we took several actions. We did a budget rescission. So we actually pulled back spending authorization that we'd already given to colleges, departments, and units. We didn't do any salary wage program. That was very difficult given the inflation environment. But we know exactly.
Just for listeners, salary and wage program means a raise for employees, basically.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. We know that if we gave a raise, that just makes our budget deficit deeper and would have a deeper hole to have to climb out of. So as difficult as it was, we felt it was the right decision and we did that. We also made some changes to our financial aid program. And a variety of actions like that. And that actually helped us to erase. In total, we cut spending by $12 million last year. So that's what helped us to erase that deficit and gives us a head start on addressing future deficits because it just doesn't end in 1 year. We know that we have to do the same this year and again next year if we have to remain financially viable. So they're difficult options, difficult choices, but we made them, and I think the university is better off for it.
Let me remind listeners, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are continuing our series today of conversations with leaders in higher education across Illinois. Today we're speaking with Andave Tarhule, who is the president of Illinois State University in normal. 800-222-9455 if you want to join us. 800-222-9455. All right, you mentioned earlier the brand new College of Engineering. A lot of universities in Illinois are cutting programs. There's always a balancing that goes on to some extent, but some have really had to make more significant cuts. But how do you set apart an engineering school at Illinois State from what so many other schools are already offering, especially with, I mean, to be candid about it, the world-class engineering program down Interstate 74 in Urbana?
That's a really good question, Brian. So this is something that the university has been working on since about 2017. So we looked at what the demand for engineering program has been in the state, and also what the demand from the part of employers has been for engineers within the state. And one thing the data showed was that every year for several years, there are about 400 engineering positions in Illinois that just go unfilled because we're not producing enough engineers, or enough engineers of the type that employers were looking for. So clearly there was a demand on the part of employers. You mentioned the program at Urbana-Champaign. Yes, that's a world-class engineering program. But because it's world-class, it's international, it's very competitive to get into. You need to have a very high ACT program to get into. And in fact, if you look at the number of students, including students from Illinois, that get turned away because they just can't get into that program or other programs, even though they have perfectly very strong academic credentials. All of that told us that there was a demand for another engineering program. We were also seeing it in our own analytics when we looked at the students who come to our website and the programs that they're looking for. What we saw was that engineering was the third most sought after program, the third program that students were coming to Illinois State University websites to look for, even though we didn't have engineering. So the combination of all those factors told us there was a need. And so we hired a marketing firm to do further analytics to see if what we were seeing could be validated. And that turned out to be the case. And it told us that there was room for another engineering program. And in fact, I would say that when we approached the U of I and spoke to them about creating an engineering program, they were very excited and supportive. One of the strongest letters of support we got was from the University of Illinois. Clearly, supporting the fact that we all knew there was additional demand and room for other engineering programs in the state. So with the second part, you ask yourself, how do we expect to stand out? That's something we discussed at length, and we identified a number of things that we feel can make our program stand out from the existing programs. One of it is we want to produce workforce-ready engineers. We want to produce engineering students that will walk out of our labs, walk onto a factory or any engineering job, and perform to the employer's expectations because we've trained them so. And so one of the things we've done is we've created an advisory board that has a lot of practitioners and industry professionals who are working very closely with our new College of Engineering and looking at the skills that the workforce is needing, not just for now, but that may be needed down the road, so that we're preparing the students essentially directly for what we know that the workforce is going to be needing. So we know that's going to really help us stand apart from the other programs. We've also set other aspirational goals in terms of our ability to retain the students that we bring in. We know that many engineering programs, only about half of the students who go into the programs eventually end up with an engineering degree. So because we're starting with a blank sheet, It gave us the option to really review what's going on at the other institutions, to look at why those students are dropping out, and to say, okay, we are going to take care of these problems from the beginning so that our students graduate at the same rate, retain and graduate at the same rate in their engineering programs as the rest of the general student body. And we're also very interested in
Sure.
diversifying the profession. A lot of engineering programs across the nation, maybe 50 to 60% of undergraduate students now are female. Females now dominate over males in terms of absolute numbers in most programs, but
Yeah.
not in engineering. In engineering, they still make up about 20%. So our goal is to diversify that. So we
Yeah.
think a combination of those different, very specific aspirations will set us apart.
All right, we need to take a break on the program. We will continue with Andave Tarhule, the president of Illinois State University. If you want to join us, 800-222-9455. This is The 21st Show.
Support for The 21st Show comes from the Des Moines Arts Center, presenting Manuel Alvarez Bravo, a pioneer of Mexican photography, featuring collaborators like Frida Kahlo, Diego Rivera, and more. On view through January 18th. More information at DesMoinesArtsCenter.org.
It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're continuing our series of conversations with university leaders across the 21st state, this time with the president of Illinois State University, Andave Tarhule. We're talking about the university's strengths, budget, and coming up, also the broader challenges about higher education right now. Let's go to the phones, though. If you want to join us, 800-222-9455 is the number. That's 800-222-9455. Terry is calling from the Quad Cities. Terry, thanks for calling in.
Hi, Brian. Doctor, I would like to compliment you on ISU's ability to increase the caliber of its students while increasing the number of students in these tough times. That must be what every university would like to do.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And my other question to you is this. You're in a probably the most booming community in downstate Illinois, and I'm wondering the degree to which being in an ideal community that has very little poverty, that has economic growth, and a great transportation system, plus good access to the Chicago suburbs, how much has that contributed to the success of ISU?
Oh, it certainly does, Terry. You are absolutely right. Geography, one of our main advantages is geography. As you say, we are located fairly centrally. A lot of our students come from Chicagoland. Many of them want to get away from home, but not too far. And we have easy access either by the interstate or the rail or bus systems. And again, as you mentioned, the McLean County economy and the Bloomington-Normal area, those are doing really well. So all those factors count. I absolutely agree with you. Our geography, the strength of the economy, our location, in addition to all those other factors I mentioned, those are all important in helping us to achieve those numbers that we're talking about.
All right, let's continue our conversation. I want to ask you about some of the national challenges to higher education. Earlier this year, you and more than 400 college and university leaders across the U.S. signed on to a public statement warning about, quote, unprecedented government overreach and political interference now endangering American higher education, end quote. I suspect there are some people in higher education who are intent on, you know, putting their head down, trying to get on with their work, avoiding attention from the Trump administration. What guides your decision to be vocal about this?
I think you have to stand for something and be willing to express your beliefs publicly. American higher education is the envy of the world. You probably hear that phrase quite a bit, and it's absolutely true. As you can hear from my accent, and as you said in your introduction, I myself was born in Nigeria, and I was attracted here because the quality of the educational system, especially higher ed system in the U.S., is unmatched. You can't find the same anywhere in the world, and you see that in the innovation, in the contributions to industry and scientific and other scholarly knowledge that we have produced. And that has really evolved from, decades of tinkering with the system and preparation and, support from the federal government. And that system is very, fairly well established, and we've become somewhat comfortable with it. Does it need to change? Yes, it does. But some of the changes we're seeing now run counter to the values and traditions and really the ability of that system to continue to deliver on its mission of creating new knowledge, lifting people out of poverty and their socioeconomic conditions. And so I think there's a real risk that the pace at which some of these changes are happening, the impact that it may have, not just on the system and the sector, but actually the larger society, if we don't approach this very thoughtfully, we might undermine one of the strongest educational systems in the world. And I think that's what's speaking up for.
Universities across the country have seen drops in international student enrollment on account of Trump administration policies. How has this affected Illinois State?
It has not as bad as badly as other institutions, in part because our numbers were not very strong to begin with, not very high. But we had set a goal to increase the number of international students. And of course, that's now at risk because we're not able to attract even at the rate that we were attracting number of international students that we're used to doing, because they can't get visas. That's the biggest issue we have, is even the students, international students who have scholarships fully funded by the university, are not able to get visas, or those students that have shown an ability to pay their own way just can't get visa appointments. It's not even that they're being denied. In some cases, they can't even get the appointments at all. So that has reduced the number of students that we're able to attract. So far, we're doing reasonably well, but there is no question we've seen a drop. Whereas we would typically get about 170 international, between 170 to 190 international students. Now, this year, we got 110, which is actually an improvement from what we feared we were going to. We thought we might end up with 80. So 110 is good, better than our worst case planning scenario, but a far cry from the number that we would typically get.
I want to share a text message we got from one of our listeners, Julie, in Bettendorf, Iowa, who said, "I'm an Illinois teacher and National Board certified. I work with the National Board Resource Center at Illinois State University. I've heard many voices from Illinois universities speaking out on behalf of their foreign exchange students or non-resident students, and how important a diverse discussion and collection of ideas and people is, and how it's beneficial to everyone's education. I support what Illinois colleges are doing to financially support students from other countries. Also, many are reaching out to those students and helping them find the proper channels and paperwork to eventually complete their admission and residency process." End quote. Thank you for the message, Julie. President Tarhile, what is Illinois State doing to support its international students?
A lot of it is information and continuing to show them what a welcoming and supportive environment this is. So our Office of International Engagement, OIE, does a really good job of creating community amongst our international students. As you can imagine, this is a time of anxiety, a time of uncertainty. Even some of the students that are here, they are unsure about their ability to stay here. Earlier in the year, we had some students whose visas were revoked, Subsequently, that action was reversed. But there are many people who continue to have a lot of anxiety and concerns, and understandably so. So much of what we're trying to do is to build a community, provide people assurances, make sure people have support, they have networks that they can reach out to, they have clear information about what their rights are, and they also know where to go and who to speak to if they have a question. So our Office of International Engagement always has done a good job, but they're stepping up providing extra opportunities for students to meet, to talk to other people, to engage, and generally to support them in making sure they're successful. So those are some of the things we're doing for the students who are here. For students who are not here, we've become more flexible in terms of allowing people to postpone or defer the admissions and to see if they can get their visas in the interim. So increasing those that kind of flexibility and supporting the students who are here are mostly the things that we're trying to do.
So you have a background in geography. You have a PhD in that. It's in the sciences, in the Department of Geography and Geology and the Environment. You know, we're at a time when people are increasingly feeling like they're entitled to alternative facts. That's one of the phrases you use. We've seen trust. Surveys have shown trust in higher education has declined quite a lot in recent decades. How are you thinking about those issues when you're leading a university, which is supposed to be one of the main fact-finding institutions in our world?
You're right. There's been an erosion of trust in higher ed, but I want to be clear, not to be defensive, but to take a step back to say there's been an erosion of fact in many institutions in our society, an erosion of trust in many institutions in our society. You are in the media. I'm sure you feel it about, you know, complaints about the mainstream media.
Absolutely.
Whether it's science with climate change, whether it's vaccines, and so on. So in general, there's just been, I think, a general erosion of trust and confidence in what we might consider traditional institutions. Having said that, there is no question that there's been an erosion of trust in higher ed. The way I think about it is, what exactly is it that people are mistrusting? And sometimes I think framing the discussion in terms of mistrust for higher ed misses the point. I think there are severe concerns about affordability and people's ability to come to university, to pay for university without incurring a lot of debt. That's something that I can see and relate to. I also understand that sometimes, depending on one's political beliefs and ideologies, there is a sense that some of what the university teaches leans in the opposite direction from what they may believe in. But overall, I think the question of affordability and whether it's really worth it for people, whether people can afford to pay and come, and whether it will pay off, that's the bigger question that I think. If we can separate out, not just lump it in emotional laden phrases like trust, but try to separate out the concerns that people have, then it's much easier to address and to, you know, in some cases where, yeah, maybe there are some things we can't address, but we can have much more informed conversation, in my opinion.
One of the other questions a listener wanted us to ask about is artificial intelligence. And you have talked about incorporating AI into the work of the university. How do you envision that? And what sort of guardrails would you like to see around it?
We moved very quickly once we, about a year, maybe more than a year ago, we formed a committee of people across the university to look at AI as soon as it came out. and to develop some principles, guiding principles about how the university and under what conditions the university would use AI. So that's been very helpful. That was very well received throughout the campus and amongst our stakeholders. And subsequently, we are now in a phase where we're moving to the next step in the process, which is creating what we call the Adaptive Edge Institute. What the institute will do is to try to look at the areas where we can deploy AI operationally. We know that there are some things AI can do cheaper and faster and better than the human eye. Manual processes, if you think about things like converting students' GPAs or transcripts and records, that's we get more than 20,000 applications a year. Now, currently, somebody has to manually look at each and every one of those. Well, AI can do it much faster. We don't rely on it entirely, but somebody, the amount of work that we have to do manually can be reduced. So we've identified a number of operations like that that we think AI can be deployed to help cost and speed and improve efficiencies. And then there is AI in terms of how we teach. We are the teaching school. That's what we're known for. And we've always risen to the challenge of meeting as societal expectations or changes. We think about what's the best way to teach. And so we're having conversations about now that students can access a lot of this information on the palm of their hands, what does teaching mean? And what's the best way to teach to ensure that we're giving value and that students are getting the most out of the experience? So that's something we're working on. And then the third is research. There are many ways in which AI can support research. What's the best way for a faculty to use it, and how does it make it easier for them? So looking at AI in terms of teaching, in terms of research, and in terms of operational efficiencies is what this center is going to be working on and has already been working on for almost a year now. So those are the ways that we think we're going to be continuing to use AI. But I do believe that just as happened with the computers and with the internet, any students leaving the university now needs to know something about AI. They don't necessarily need to use it, but they need to know what it is, what it can do, what it cannot do, what the limitations are. And we're doing all of that to make sure that our students stay on the cutting edge of this technology. And they can figure for themselves how best they want to fit in. Our job is to make sure that they are aware of it and its capabilities and the ethical and best ways in which they can use or adapt it.
Yeah, as one of our producers said as we were preparing for this conversation, how do we use artificial intelligence to think more and not less? We're going to have to leave it there, though. So, President Andave Tarhule of Illinois State University, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today here on the 21st Show.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Once again, Andave Tarhule is the 21st president of Illinois State University. You can find other conversations in our series of discussions on higher education in Illinois, including the president of the University of Illinois System and Northern Illinois. We'll have more in the future. You can find all those on our website, 21stshow.org. Once again, 21stshow.org. Coming up after the break, a grand tour of Illinois cemeteries, some notable for their natural beauty, others for the people at rest there. That's coming up here on the 21st Show. Stay with us.